thanks for helping out. The traditional way of starting a presentation like this is to thank the organizers for inviting me. As you might have noticed, everybody has done that. And I will also add to the choir generally. But I also wanted to thank the organizers for inviting all the others. It was great. I really enjoyed quite a lot of the presentation, so thank you for that. My little contribution to these transdisciplinary dialogues, because I think that that has worked quite well, is to focus on the notion, the concept of participation itself. I come from a discourse theoretical background. That means that we like these little things called signifiers. We like to look at concepts and the way that concepts gain particular meanings. And that's the reason why the title is actually referring, I had my Lacanian weakness when I was making it. It's referring to the master signifier of participation, which is, I'll try to argue, the notion of power. And that's the starting point. That's what I want to talk about. The picture you see next to it tries to symbolize the very same idea. It comes out of an article that was written by Sherry Arenstein, a seminal text on participation called The Ladder of Participation from 1969. But allegedly the picture comes from a wall somewhere in Paris, somewhere in May 68, and it obviously also immediately captures this very intimate connection between participation and power. And that's what I'll try to talk about. Now, the real starting point of my talk is a very simple idea. If we want to talk about participation, if we think about the concept of participation itself, it becomes, I think, quite necessary to look at participation as a political concept. And I was extremely grateful that Geert already mentioned Chantal Mouffe. It's always nice to have other Belgians on stage. Because I'll come back to that notion of the political and the way that she refers to it, but I want to emphasize right now, at this moment at least, is the idea that once participation becomes political and becomes seen as political, it also becomes seen as structurally unstable and as part of a struggle in society. And that will be the starting point, and in a way that will be the main argument. What we see in society is that there is a struggle over the meaning of participation itself as part of a broader democratic struggle. And that struggle in itself creates the contingency that we can find in the notion of participation itself. Now, you might have guessed my talk will be a bit theoretical. It will hurt a bit. I'm sorry for that. But I'll do my best to be as clear as possible. Now, if we go and look at participation from this perspective of a struggle, then almost automatically we get a diversity of meanings hidden behind the notion of participation. And I'll try to argue that there are actually dimensions in there, going from more minimalist to more maximalist meanings of participation. But what a number of authors have stated quite some time ago is that there's quite a lot of diversity. And you can see Carol Pateman up there. And this is 1970. And you can see that already then she was lamenting that the widespread use of the term has tended to mean that any precise, meaningful content has disappeared. I think we can agree with that in 2013. There is a wide variety of definitions, conceptualizations of the notion of participation abound. Now, if we accept that notion of diversity, if we accept that there are an enormous amount of definitions, conceptualizations of participation out there, we can look at the ways that people have tried to deal with that diversity. And that brings us to a series of strategies that people have used to cope with that diversity. And I would argue that there are two main strategies. One is a very popular strategy, and I've called that the messianic strategy. It's to save the authentic meaning of participation from all these threats from the outside. It's to distinguish between real, genuine, authentic participation and pseudo-manipulated semi-participation, fake participation, and all these other forms. And we end up in that logics in a system of dichotomization. We end up with two sides, polar sides. one form of participation which is considered to be real and authentic, and another form which is considered to be fake. Now, the second strategy, and I'll talk about that later, it will take some time before I get there, the second strategy will be to analyze the diversity itself as a political struggle. Not to focus on distinguishing between right and wrong, but to actually analyze how this struggle is part of our democratic reality. But let me give you a couple of examples. I already mentioned Sherry Arenstein, 1969, The Ladder of Participation, and I think the picture speaks for itself. It's a ladder metaphor, and you have to go up the stairs. And the lower part of the ladder is the tokenist part, it's the non-participatory part. The upper part of the ladder, that's where the good forms of participation are to be found. This is what she calls citizen power. So we get the dichotomization in the logics of the ladder itself. There are other versions. If you look at development theory, for instance, we see a very, very similar kind of debate. This comes from the World Bank Participation Source Book. I'm not necessarily a World Bank fan, I must confess, but still, it's a very interesting publication because a couple of reasons. The first reason, what it does is to emphasize that participation, and you can read that on the screen, it's a process through which stakeholders influence and share control. And that's our notion of power already being part of this definition. But it also focuses on particular processes, which is something that I'll come back to. It focuses on decision-making processes. And I think if we want to look at participation, that is actually really important. But it does more. It creates that very same kind of dichotomy, but in a very particular way. It creates a dichotomy between, on the one hand, participation, and on the other hand, the preconditions of participation, the prerequisites of participation. In this case, they're talking about listening and consultation. And what it says is that listening and consultation are structurally different from participation. But at the same time, they're very necessary preconditions to enter into processes of participation. So we still find a dichotomized logics. We still find two forms. If you only organize consultation and only organize listening, you're not entering necessarily into a participatory logics. But you still need them in order to enter into these participatory logics. So there's the logics of dichotomization, but at the same time, this definition contains a way to overcome that. And that is, I think, incredibly important. The last thing I want to say here is that listening and consultation are irrelevant. I do want to argue that they're very, very relevant processes, but I simply also want to argue, joining the World Bank, can you imagine? I want to argue that they're still different from participation. And there's been a lot of talk about the arts, so at least I can have my little contribution here, pointing out Moholo Nagy's article, Theater, Circus, and Variety. And in a way, he uses the same dichotomized logics. He distinguishes, on the one hand, between spectators, the silent masses of the spectator, and there is some hyperbolic language in there, the participants that the peak of cathartic ecstasy fuse with the action. We still find the same logics of the dichotomization, good participation, and problematic forms of participation embedded within that dichotomy. And even the OECD has managed to come up with a ladder-based definition of participation, where we can see consultation, information distribution being distinguished from what they call active participation. Now, that's, I think, the first point I wanted to make. There are quite a lot of these approaches that focus very, very deeply on that dichotomized logics in the definition of participation, distinguishing between authentic forms of participation and problematic forms of participation. That's, an easy opening statement. Now, there are quite a number of problems with that first approach, I would argue. And you might be wondering what Jan Fabre's work is doing here. Well, obviously, he's standing on a ladder, so I couldn't help myself including this picture. Sorry for that. But there's actually another point that I wanted to make with the picture. It's Jan Fabre's work called Man Measuring the Sky. And you might have tried to measure the sky at some stage, And in the process, you might have realized that that's basically impossible. And that's a metaphor that I want to use to argue that the first approach is trying to do something which is basically impossible. It's trying to generate a cutoff point where at some stage something is no longer participatory and at other stage something is participatory. And what it's doing, it's using a very reductionist approach towards participatory processes. If we analyze participatory processes and we look at them much more in depth, what we see is that there is an incredible richness of practices. Some of these components can be only minimally participatory, but other components of the same practices can actually be very participatory. And that complexity is missed in these ladder-based approaches. Secondly, there is this distinction between participation in a particular field and participation through a particular field in another field. We've seen some examples yesterday, for instance, when participation in the arts was actually enabling participation in urban spaces. Right? That's the participation through a particular field. That's a very complicated dynamics that is not captured very well in these ladder-based approaches. Now, at the same time, we should be a bit careful. Usually, when I show this slide, I ask people if they know the proverb, if it actually says anything to them, before I'm being accused of child abuse, which is usually the next step that happens. I won't go into this pseudo-participatory moment and ask you that question, because the answer is obviously quite clear. We're not supposed to throw out the baby with the bathwater. These first cluster of approaches is quite valuable for a number of reasons. They have problems, but they're precious for, I would argue, three reasons. The first reason is that they have a very strong emphasis on the emancipatory potential of these participatory practices. They defend a very normative position, and accidentally, I actually tend to share that normative position. I like to sort of go up, high up these stairs, because I think they're socially beneficial, democratically beneficial. But it is a very, at the same time, ideological normative position to defend these more radical maximalist versions of participation. The second point that they raise is that there is, at some stage, a need for demarcation. At some stage, participation just stops being participation. And we should acknowledge that. Maybe not in the way that the ladder-based approaches are trying to deal with that. But at some stage, participation is no longer participatory. And here I would like to emphasize that for me, these participatory processes are very much about equalized power relationships in particular moments of decision-making. And at some point, a group might think that they have some say, some power position, but they might not have it. And that is the moment where participation stops. And maybe for these kinds of scenarios, we should use different concepts. We should not use the notion of participation. Maybe, I would argue, and I've argued before quite extensively, I'm afraid, maybe we should use concepts like interaction for that. And maybe we should create a distinction. Maybe we should come up with a whole set of other very relevant and valuable notions, but maybe we should at the same time create in a very careful way this demarcation and follow the footsteps of this first cluster of approaches, the ladder-based approaches. But finally, what they also show, and if you've listened attentively to the definitions and if you read them in that first approach, you see the very strong emphasis on power. If there is something in there in all these different definitions, and I could give you a couple of hundred probably, what you see is the very, very strong emphasis on the notion of power. And again, I want to emphasize that the way that I tend to define participation is in that very close relationship with power, where participation is a moment where there is a more equalized set of power relationships among these actors in particular moments of decision-making. These moments of decision-making can be formal or informal. They can be minimalist. They can be maximalist. There's a wide range of options there. But of course, at the same time, if I offer you this ultimate, wonderful, and easy five-letter answer, hey, if you're talking about participation, then it's power, well, I open up a black box because maybe the definition of participation is difficult to handle, but I can assure you that the definition of power is even worse. So we end up in a pretty catch-22 situation. And to get me out of that catch-22 situation, I really need the help of some friends. You might have noticed here that Chantal Mouffe is actually there, so here we go. Her husband is also there. That's the second one. That's Ernesto Laclau. So the entire family has joined us. If we want to talk about power, obviously I would argue that, for instance, authors like Foucault and their very strong emphasis on the strategic dimensions of power might help us out of that definitional problem, because through the definition of power as a more multidirectional, as a more mobile, as an intentional but non-subjective process, we can very strongly emphasize the fact that any kind of participatory process is a moment of struggle and negotiation between different groups, between different actors that actually try to realize their particular strategies. And a participatory process is a process where these power relationships and these strategies are more equalized. That's one step, but it's still very much a struggle and a conflict. Not particularly a violent conflict, and that's again where Hirt's lecture was extremely helpful. Conflict is not seen as something which is necessarily evil. It's actually seen as something which is very generative in a very Foucauldian way. My second friend, Ernesto Laclau, and this is hardcore discourse theory, I'm afraid, tends to emphasize that struggle has a very discursive component. The concept itself, the way we label and define, discursify these practices, is just as important as the materiality of these practices. So the discourse on participation, the ideologies on participation, strongly matter in these kinds of debates. And that allows us also, because of the notion of struggle, because of the wide variety of different projects behind that, it brings in the definition of participation as something contingent. It's not stable. Different actors take different positions on what participation is and should be in a society, for instance. The third person I want to quickly mobilize, well, it's not a real intimate friend. It's sort of a good acquaintance. This is Norman Fairclough, a critical discourse analysis person. But what critical discourse analysis has emphasized is the materiality of all this, much more than discourse theory has done so. What their point is that discourse is constituted and constitutive of reality. And that allows me to say that these discourses on participation co-construct our social realities, but these discourses themselves are again co-constructed by the material practices of participation. So it's actually a very dynamical process. Giving meaning to social processes matters, yes, but these social practices also involve and are invested into these discourses themselves. So we end up in a very cyclical, dynamical logics. And finally, what I need Chantal Mouffe for is her definition of the political. For her, the political is a context of conflictuality. It is something which is seen as an ontological definition and not something which is exclusively restricted to the world of institutionalized politics. It is something which goes beyond, which means that, and that's also a very Foucauldian position, power is basically everywhere. The political is basically everywhere. There is no escape to that. Okay, cool, thank you. Having said that, I can slowly move towards my second approach towards participation, and that brings together the friends. We'll have a wonderful dinner at some night. Well, no, it's a bit annoying that at least one of them is dead. But we'll still have a nice conversation using whatever they've developed into that second model, which emphasizes participation as a struggle, which is part of a much broader struggle in society, and that's a struggle for democracy. And the picture you see here on screen is an overview that a political scientist, David Held, has generated. And there's actually on the slide only one letter which matters, and that's the S in models of democracy. There is not one model of democracy in contemporary society. There's a wide variety of models of democracy that actually enter into a discursive struggle with each other to define what the true nature of democracy is and what it should be. participation is very intimately linked to that. Because, and this is the favorite moment where the entire room actually tilts a bit because they have to read the slide. That's also interaction, but not participation, trust me. What we see in the definitions of participation and in the definitions of democracy that David Held mobilizes is that each of these models is always based on a very simple balance, an equilibrium between, on the one hand, the exercise of power, and on the other hand, the delegation of power, the notion of representation in a political meaning, not in a symbolic meaning. What we see is that each of these democratic models has a particular way of creating that balance. And some of these models actually tend to lean towards more stronger forms of participation and less stronger forms of the delegation of power. And others actually have a much more inverse model. My point here, though, is that these approaches towards democracy and necessarily also towards participation coexist. It's not that one of them has won the battle. The struggle is actually an ongoing struggle that will never stop, which is very much part of the logics of democracy itself. And that brings in the instability and the contingency of the notion of participation itself, because that is also very much part of this struggle. We can translate this equation into an approach which emphasizes more minimalist versions of participation and minimalist forms of democracy on the one hand, and the more maximalist versions. While in the more minimalist versions of democratic participation, as it's here on the slide, we see that there is a very strong emphasis on the delegation of power, where citizens, people, actually allow others to decide for them, while necessarily the emphasis on participation is limited. And think about representative democracy, which is very much based on the logics of voting, which means the delegation of power. More maximalist versions of democracy tend towards an increase, a maximalization of participation. But rest assured, there is always the balance. Both of them are always there. There is always a level of delegation, and there is always a level of participation in these kinds of equations. Now, if I would have had time, which I don't, I would have given you a wonderful example. And maybe at the end, we can have a vote. We can have a truly participatory moment in this room, and we can have a vote whether I should explain you this wonderful example or not. This is actually a perfect way to gain another 5 minutes during a presentation. But what we can do is move beyond the world of democratic theory and still move beyond institutionalized politics, because we can argue that this minimalist, maximalist logics can also be used to think about a wide variety of other fields. I come from a media studies background, so this is a version that deals with this distinction between, on the one hand, minimalist forms of participation, media participation, and on the other hand, more maximalist versions of participation, where in the minimalist version, media professionals tend to exercise a very strong power position, allowing others, audience members, to do a couple of things. They might post a comment if they're lucky. While in more maximalist versions of participation, there is a much stronger level of participation and a stronger form of involvement, a stronger form of co-decision-making. There are stronger power positions in there for everybody involved. And working myself towards the end, I should still emphasize that this minimalist, maximalist dimension of participation is only part of the story. Connected to that are a number of other concepts that matter, but I would quite strongly actually argue that they're very different. And the notions of access and interaction are for me very, very different notions that allow us to think about the preconditions of participation. In order to participate, we need access. We need the logics of presence. In order to participate, we also need that notion of interaction. We need to construct these socio-communicative relationships, which is part of the definition of interaction. We need them to participate, sure, but they're not the same thing. They are structurally different because they do not emphasize the co-decision-making and the equalized co-decision-making, the more balanced power relationships, which for me is very much part of that definition of participation. So allow me, having said that, to wrap up things with, in a way, summarizing what I've said before. First point I want to emphasize in avoiding these detachments is that we should very, very clearly avoid disconnecting participation from the political. It is a very political, ideological notion. All of us, when we are writing about participation, are implicated in this political process. There is no escape. You position yourself whatever you do. Secondly, I would argue that partially because of that, because of the political nature of participation, there are a diversity of positions which enter with each other into a struggle over dominance. Different forms of participation, more minimalist, more maximalist forms, defended by particular actors, will enter into a struggle. And I think a lot of the lectures that we've heard, a lot of the talks that we've heard before, actually illustrate all these different struggles, all these different positions which coexist, which happen at the same time within one society. In some cases, they might be more part of a niche structure where they are not really entering in conflict with dominant, hegemonic ways of dealing with participation, but in other cases, they might actually really come out and enter in a very strong conflict. And finally, what I also want to emphasize is this intimate connection between participation and power. If we want to study participatory processes, we need to look at the processes themselves. We need to enter the processes that we quite often black box, because we talk about a participatory culture. We talk about how wonderful our world is changing because we're all becoming more participatory. But if we enter into these participatory processes and if we analyze the complexities of the power positions that different actors hold, we see a wide variety of minimalist, semi-minimalist, only interaction-based, or maximalist forms of participation. And that, if we want to analyze these participatory conditions, we need to ask one very simple question. When we enter into these participatory processes, we need to ask the question, who decides? Thank you.